Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined once again by friend of the show, Brandon Piller, Pilsy. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming on. How are you feeling just with the Senators team and having to podcast daily after another pretty disappointing November to up to this point?
Hey, there's still time in November to turn things around, Alex. But yeah, thanks for having me. Always enjoy coming on. Yeah, the November scaries are a real thing. And Sens fans, whether you're superstitious or just a little stitious, November has Sens fans worried, and we've got the facts and the data and the stats to back it up, which is unfortunate. But thank God they won that game up against the Calgary Flames, a 4-3 win. A little close for my liking, but we'll take the 2 points anyway we can get them. I was starting to panic about the Ottawa Senators, Alex. After that Vancouver Canucks loss, it felt like the sky was falling. It felt like the Ottawa Senators were not going to turn things around, but I've decided I'm going to give this team a little bit more time. We can't, like, November is going to be god awful no matter what. So we just have to get through November, and I'm going to have a more realistic assessment of where this team is at, probably around the Christmas break, because then you got a little bit more games under your belt. You hope that they can put themselves in good position so that road trip that they're going to be on when World Juniors are happening in Ottawa doesn't totally derail them. We know how this team has played on the road in the past, and even this season, it's been a little iffy. So I'm holding off judgment now, but I will say I was expecting this team to be in a better spot than they are right now. That's for sure.
Doesn't it feel as though like I've been trying to write about this team after essentially most games, and I keep going back to like pretty good process. They're playing pretty well and they lose. And it felt like in the past, like last year, they were 10-10, I think through the first 20 games, but it really felt as though the ship was just they were holding on, for dear life. This year it doesn't feel like that, but they have a worse result, a worse record. Like what do you make of that maybe disconnect?
I feel like that's a glass half full there. You can look at it too, well, a glass with half the water in it. You can
Yes.
look at it as either glass half full, in which I'm sure the coaching staff is being like, look, we've got the analytics we like, the process is working, players are buying in, we're so close in so many games, we're gonna, like, eventually, just statistically, we're gonna turn this thing around. And then if you want to look at it as a glass half empty, you're like, well, if they're doing everything right and not winning, how is it going to get better? Especially throughout most of this season, this team has had a pretty good bill of health. Now, obviously, you've
Not
got
enough.
Artem Zub with a foot injury now. David Perron is out. We're not sure how healthy Shabbat is, as he had to leave one of the games and came back, but it seems like he's all good. Nick Cousins wasn't on the ice today for practice. I'm not sure whether that's injury related or a maintenance day or a coaching decision. We'll find out later on, but I think that you got to look at it as a positive, and you know me, positive Pilsy. I'm going to spin this as a good thing. So I'm going glass half full with this, that if they can just keep on going with this process, if we see star players that we know can elevate their game, I'm talking about Linus Ullmark, a reigning Vezina winning goalie. I'm talking about Jake Sanderson, a guy who we've come to see play much more consistent, stable hockey than what he's playing right now. If those are the two guys I'm really keying in on and being like, if they can elevate their game where we know they can elevate their game to, I think that's going to change a lot of those one goal games and a lot of those swings to hopefully bring some stability to this Sens team.
Is it too silly to suggest that it could be as simple as goaltending?
I mean, goaltending is a huge part of winning and losing hockey games. And you look at the goaltending, and Ullmark, he'll be the first one to tell you. And Alex, you're around this team and at the rink all the time. He'll be the first one to tell you that he knows that this isn't where he needs to be playing and that expectations are higher of him. So first off, that's good, because if you have a goalie being like, I don't know what you guys are talking about, I'm doing fine, then you start to get a little nervous because you expect a lot more out of Linus Ullmark than this, and he knows it. So I think that's a positive sign. We're going to get more. I think probably the move was a big deal. He's got a young family. You're not only changing teams, but you're moving countries. So there's a lot of things going on, and he had been really comfortable in Boston. So I'm willing to give Linus Allmark a little bit more time here. And then Anton Forsberg, when he's had to step in at the start of the season, we were a little nervous when he had to handle the full workload when Allmark went down for a bit. But when he's stepping in as a guy that's just playing spot starts and going to be playing every back to back, I think you can be confident in him to get you a couple wins there. So this year, I think the goaltending is going to be different than in past years. I just think the resume and the kind of guy that Linus Allmark is, he's going to turn it around here. I know a lot of Sens fans have been burned. You look at Matt Murray, you looked at his resume and you thought he was going to turn around. That didn't work out. You look at Cam Talbot, a veteran guy, and that, not to say that he was horrible in Ottawa, but it just didn't reach the expectations we had hoped. And then Jonas Korpisalo comes in, signs that huge deal, and he gets traded away within one season, and it went terribly. So I know Sens fans are three times bitten, and maybe twice shy. I'm not sure if I got that saying right, but you know what I'm
Kind
getting at.
of,
And they're a little nervous, but Linus Allmark for me is the guy.
Well, I guess with that, and Travis Green's talked about Linus is our starter, but I may be more of the opinion of, hey, like, who's the better goalie right now? Your team needs wins, and Anton Forsberg has a much better save percentage. He won the last game. Allmark's lost a couple in a row, obviously played really poorly in that Philadelphia game. He's kind of found his groove a little bit, but what do you think about that as riding the hot goalie? Because I think about it's not exactly apples to apples, or I don't think that was the right terminology, but the fact that you look at Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida, and for a couple years people were like, he sucks, he's terrible. And he had a couple down years, and maybe we're seeing that with Allmark. And then they played Spencer Knight. They had Alex Lyon, made the playoffs, and then all of a sudden, Bobrovsky goes on a heater and he's back. But they rode the hot goalie rather than just always cede the net to, the guy with the big payday. What do you think of that? Because I'm maybe more of the position, like, if Forsberg's your better goalie right now, give him a couple more starts, and then if he falls off, then you have Allmark there waiting in the wings.
I think you could go both ways with this, Alex. I'm the master of spin zones here, so I'll give you both sides of it. I get the argument for the hot hand. Goalies are voodoo. A lot of it is mental. If you've got a goalie that's playing hot and is confident and the team plays confident in front of him, I don't care what his name is or what the dollar amount or the years on his contract are. Nothing wrong with trying to catch lightning in a bottle and ride that hot hand. So people that say we want to ride Forsberg a little bit more, that's totally fine. And it's not like he's an entry-level goalie. He's a guy making 2.75 million. He's a guy that the Senators have trusted. They gave him that 3-year deal. He's a solid backup. I mean, some teams would even be happy to have Forsberg as a 1B in a tandem type situation. Now, let's look at the Allmark side. This is a guy that's been in a tandem type situation for a long time with Jeremy Swayman, even going back to his Buffalo days. I don't think he was the bona fide number one starter. And he's talked about that. He wants to be the number one guy. He wants that challenge. He's getting paid like he's that number one guy. They signed him to a 4-year deal worth 8.25 million annual average value each year before he even played a game for this team. Like the confidence in Allmark is there from the management. They put their money where their mouth is. And I think you gotta give Allmark the benefit of the doubt that he's gonna turn this around. Otherwise, he starts losing that confidence. He starts being like, oh man, I wanted to be the number one guy. I'm in a tandem again. And not only am I in a tandem, but I feel like I'm the 1B and Forsberg is the 1A. And then you start getting into some tense situations mentally. And I'm not saying this is true. This is just me speculating. I don't know where Allmark and Forsberg are at with that, but this is just me speculating. But you don't want the guy that came here thinking he's going to be the number one guy within the first 2 months of the season being like, what the heck? Like, I know I struggled, but I need time to get back into things, and I'm not getting that opportunity. So I think you want to keep Allmark in that routine of being like, at the very least, being you're the 1A in this tandem. And hopefully, as things go on, you view him as the number one starter. We're recording at 2:40 p.m. on Wednesday, November 27th. From what it looked like from the Sens practice, it seems like Allmark is going to be the starter. That was the decision I wanted. I wanted to get Ullmark back in because you got a back-to-back this weekend. So Ullmark and Forsberg are going to play, whether it's up against LA or Anaheim. They're going to play one of those games no matter what. Forsy just came off a win. Get Ullmark back in there, and then you can decide whether you want Forsy or Ullmark to start the back-to-back. But I think it's great to get Ullmark in. The San Jose Sharks team, they're
They're
closer
playing.
to the bottom of the standings, but they're a scrappy team. You cannot take this team lightly. They've spoiled a lot of teams' opportunities here. Our guy JD Young at Locked On Sharks, Alex, he's been taking screenshots of all the other Locked On podcasts thumbnails when they lose to the Sharks, and it's like time to panic by the Red Wings, Islanders, is the season over? Like all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So the San Jose Sharks are comfortable being like, you're gonna come into our barn thinking you're gonna get an easy win, and we're gonna smack you. So that can be a big detriment to this team, and I feel like that's a good opportunity for Ullmark to come in and be like, this is a team we should beat. I'm gonna steal a win for you guys, and hopefully that's what happens tonight.
And I tweeted about this earlier today, but that's maybe been the problem with this team. You know, they lost to Buffalo. They lost to, well, and Buffalo's playing well now, but at the time they weren't. Obviously, the Philadelphia game, I think that's really on Allmark more than the team, but still, that's a game they should have won. And obviously, the Habs earlier in the year to snap that crazy streak. But those are the kinds of games against San Jose. They're playing Anaheim. Their schedule does kind of it goes a bit. In the maybe easier direction than it was last week, where they just had a murderer's row. These are the games they have to win, and hopefully Allmark, as you said, like he plays well. They went 4-1 or something like that, and he's stable, steady, like their general manager. But overall, I think it's going to be really interesting the remainder of the season where this team goes in net, and it feels like it's just the same thing, you know, every year is. What's happening in net? What's the problem? There's a mini crisis. But the other thing that I kind of want to go to is it does feel as though this team does have a bit of a mental block. You talk to Travis Green, I have after games. A lot of the time, it's about our mentality. You know, we're playing well, but little mistakes here and there. Brady Tkachuk a couple last week called the team's performance immature. What do you think of this team right now in terms of their mentality? And is that maybe part of the reason why every time in November or even in October that they kind of slide?
Yeah, it's tough to shake those things, right? And I mean, look, we're guilty of this just as much as anyone, constantly talking about the November record, constantly bringing it up, constantly having the graphic on TSN Sportsnet and Amazon Prime broadcast where it shows this team in November. So for players to just be able to completely avoid and ignore that is probably impossible. So it's going to be a factor. I think this team has the right group that they can figure it out. Now, it's still a young leadership core. You look at Brady Tkachuk, still a young captain. Even Thomas Chabot is certainly not a young player, but he's still in his 20s. And then you got Claude Giroux, who is the veteran guy that you hope can help stable things. And then they brought in other veterans as well with winning cultures and winning experience that you hope can help. When the team gets a little shaky, those guys can be like, hey, look, it's a long season. We're going to get through this. We got to stick to our process, and eventually we're going to get the results, things like that. But it is tough for Sens fans to watch this team lose and then watch Brady have his temper tantrums where he just lets his emotions flow and goes after guys and starts fights and things like that. Like, sure, don't get me wrong. I love a good Brady tilt as much as the next guy, but it's just a tough look when every time things start going bad for this team that your captain goes off the rails. And I think that's something that he's going to have to learn because you can't get, and Travis Green has talked about this, you can't get too high, you can't get too low. And that was Brady getting too low and being frustrated at the situation, whether that's just him personally being like, I gotta let off some steam. I'm pissed off right now. Or if that's him being like, I gotta send a message to the team that how we're playing and what's going on right now is not acceptable. And I gotta show them that I'm not happy with this. Either way, I think he's gotta pick his spots a little bit better.
And I completely agree, and I wrote about that after Monday's game. It's just like I don't like he's not getting traded. I think that's absurd. I know you know that as well, but you know, in many ways, he's an unbelievable player, right?
Yes.
Obvious, but as you mentioned, he gets in fights. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and that might be the best part of his game, but also the biggest detriment. right? That he really rides the highs and lows, and that's what the team does. And he's only, I think, 25, 26. We're all fallible. I am not perfect. I'm an emotional person too. We all are, right? So, but I think that is part of maybe the leadership with him, where I really would like, instead of Travis Green, I understand why he defended him on Monday, but say, hey, we just need to be more even keel. We need to play obviously with passion, but also not lose kind of the emotional part of our game and spiral. And you saw with Tim Stützle as well later in that Vancouver game, he got into a fight, and it's like, Tim Stützle, like, I am never going to complain about both those players' effort. In that game against Vancouver, he was unbelievable. You could tell he was just a menace, but it wasn't going his way. And I think about a little bit like the term, like, work smart, not hard. And obviously you want them to work hard, but sometimes it feels like this team doesn't play smart. And you kind of talk about talking to guys like Cousins and Jensen, where they're like, we kind of just lose a little bit of like game management a little bit. And I think that's where this team is hopefully learning. And I think in many ways they're playing much better hockey. Like, I don't think they're playing bad. They've had stretches, every team does. But can they start to, like, oh, you're up 2-1, don't make a pinch. Like Tyler Cleven against, was it Vegas, like, pinches up, but like really, and leads to a goal, right? Just like mistakes like that that just are kind of, you can prevent. And it feels as though this team is still in a place where maybe we would have thought 2, 3 years ago they would be learning, or would have learned. And now we're still kind of seeing the remnants, maybe, another ownership group, another kind of management group, where things were let to be, that there was no consequences. And I think Travis Green has brought some of that, but there's still, it's kind of like trying to untangle all the, I don't know what the right word is, but wounds, toxicity, I don't know what, but just like the bad habits is probably the best way to describe it, that this team still feels like it has.
Yeah, and that's why it's so frustrating for Sens fans, because you're sitting there being like, everything has changed. New ownership, new coach, new general manager, new goalie, veterans from winning cultures being brought in. You're like, these are all the pieces of the puzzle that we thought were the main problems and were the causes of losing. Now, not only do you fix one of those issues, you fixed all of them, essentially. So for this team not to be able to kind of snap out of it, I think is frustrating for Sens fans. But then you got to look at it too, when with big change like that, there's a lot of adjustments, there's a lot of growing pain. So that's why I myself, Adam,
It's
Alex,
okay. I get it
have
all the
to
time. Don't worry.
you got two first names, so
I
it
know.
makes sense.
Fuck.
But you got to, I got Adam Gaudette on the brain. But you
Okay.
got to be able to understand that it will take time for them to fully be able to buy into this process game in and game out. And when they're not getting the results, maybe they're like, well, this process isn't working. We want to change it. No, you got to stick to what Travis Green believes in and how he thinks this team can win games. And I do think, like I mentioned, with upticks in Ullmark and especially Sanderson's performances, I think that's going to help swing those one goal games into the Ottawa Senators' favor a little bit more.
And I really think if Ullmark had played better to begin the season, and they had just won, eked out that game against Vegas, even Colorado, and just their record would be more reflective of their play, it would, I think we'd have such a dramatic kind of look about this team. I don't think they lose those 5 games in a row, but that didn't happen, right? And they didn't get bailed out. They made some dumb mistakes at bad times in games, and now you're like, oh my God, they're 9-11-1, or whatever, and the sky is falling. And I don't think that's the case, but we look at the next stretch of games. You talk about Christmas, and I think that's a really interesting point. This team has, I think, their last 15 games, 14 are at home. I think I have that right, but I could be
At
missing.
the end of the season?
Yeah, but they have a
Yeah, here,
huge
I'll
amount
tell
of
you.
home games. But my point being is that they're going to go on this huge road stretch, play 10 games on the road because of the World Juniors. Once again, the Sens have a terrible schedule. Great. But if they're, let's say, after that 10 game stretch, like 500, a game, hopefully like a game or two above 500, I'll be like, oh, they have this like windfall at the end of the season where they can really pick up points, and their schedule will get much easier. And so I do think there's some promising signs. At the same time, until they do it, it's really hard to believe. And the East is pretty, middling. I call it the Mid-Atlantic for a reason. At least their division as well. And so they're not going to be 15 points out of a playoff spot if they're playing decent hockey.
Yeah, you hope not. I'm looking at the schedule here, Alex, and you're right. In April, they have 10 games total. 9 of them are at home and the one away game. Now, this team's been performing better, but it initially you look at it as an easier spot on the bingo card. Their only away game is against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So sure, that road trip is going to be tough. It's going to be a grind to get through, but if they're in the mix for a playoff spot by the time April comes around, they have 9 home games. And then even you can look at travel wise, going to Columbus is not that big of a deal, road trip wise. So they will have an opportunity to control their own destiny and be set up for success at the end of the season. They just got to put themselves in a position to be able to really grab hold of that. And we hope that'll happen.
It feels like in the past, like maybe to segue a little bit, but like the loss of Artem Zub would just be like, okay, the
Devastating.
yeah, devastating. And if it does feel like there's a little bit this year where like obviously Travis Hamonic, as you know, gets a lot of flack. I think some fair, some maybe over the top. I think he's actually played really well the past maybe 5, 10 games. I don't know if you feel the same, but
He's turned things around for sure.
yeah, for sure. But how do you think this team's going to react to having that guy who's been with Sanderson, but they haven't played particularly that well together? How big of a loss do you think it is?
I think you nailed it, Alex. I think it's much more minimal than it would have been in the past. And that's good and bad, because it's bad because in the past, it was such a big deal because Sanderson and Zub were an elite shutdown pair. And then you break that pair up and you're like, how are we going to shut down other teams' top lines? But this year, it hasn't really happened. And the Sens are kind of in that weird spot where they don't know how to properly play Travis Hamonic and JBD. They've been working on that. Now both these guys are going to be in the lineup more often than not, especially a fractured foot with Zub. Who knows how long that's going to take? I don't. Did you get an injury update on
No, they
Zub?
didn't really like. They just said, "Well, like, it'll be out a while or something." I
It'll
know,
be weeks, I'm sure.
Claire Hanna talked to a doctor. I think she tweeted. I don't know if you saw that, but like that a doctor said, like a fractured heel is like 8 to 12 weeks. So that's basically
Oh,
2
wow.
months. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going on Claire Hanna, of my enemy network. I'm kidding, but but I don't think he's back anytime soon. No.
So that's a long time, and that's why you started hearing rumors about the Ottawa Senators fishing around for defensemen. A lot of Sens fans are thinking about David Yerchik. I'm not sure how I feel about that,
Like
but they did bring up Donovan Sabrango. He's going to get an opportunity to have his first NHL start probably sometime on this road trip. And you look at JBD and Hamonic. You need both those guys to step up. This is the opportunity of a I was going to say a lifetime, maybe that's a
that.
little over the top, but this is a massive, massive opportunity for JBD. He did not get a contract extension. He's on 1 year. He's battling just to get in the lineup when you've got an aging veteran in Hamonic that JBD is probably sitting there being like, I should be the one getting these opportunities and he should be the one filling in. But now he's got this opportunity with Zub out for a while. The Sens haven't made a trade yet. It's hard to make a trade in season, so it's probably not going to happen for a while, if at all. So JBD's got to step things up here, and he's given a good opportunity. Travis Green has mixed the lineups up, and he's not on that third pair with Tyler Cleven. He's playing with Thomas Chabot in the top four. And we all know, like, Chabot and Jensen has been a great pair, but we all know Thomas Chabot has been kind of looking for that partner, and he might have found it in Jensen. But let's say Jensen gets elevated to that top pair with Sanderson. I think Sanderson and Jensen could be
Oh,
an
okay.
elite top pair, especially Jensen's been this team's top defenseman. Get him with Jake Sanderson, try to elevate his game again. And then if JBD can have chemistry with Tom Chabot, he's found himself in a really good spot that could solidify not only a spot in the lineup this year, but could be massive for him and his agent looking for a new contract to extend with the Ottawa Senators in the future. So JBD needs to look at this opportunity and really take a hold of it because this could affect the trajectory of his entire career.
No, I think he's hit it on the nail, and I love JBD, just one of the nicest guys you'll meet in the locker room, one of the first guys I kind of got to know a little bit. But I completely agree. But I think what you touch upon is such an interesting point, because Zub is so important in many ways and was just always paired with Sanderson is like, do you put Jensen on the top pairing with Sanderson? And they, like, as you said, I think that pairing would do wonders. But then I don't know how I feel about Hamonic and Shabbat. I kind of might maybe like that more than JBD and Shabbat. But then Clevin's really struggled of late. Do you put him with Jensen, which they did at times against Calgary, and they played well. So I think in a way, Jensen is the new Zub, where it's like wherever
Yes.
he goes, he becomes the
The
most important
stabilizer.
right shot. Yeah. And
Yeah.
so I just think that's going to be a really fascinating
But
kind of.
the issue for me, Alex, is when you're struggling on D and your best defenseman by far, I'm talking about Nick Jensen, it has really been supporting this team. You found a perfect partner with Thomas Chabot. Why would you downgrade him in the lineup and cut down on his minutes? I get it. It's to try to stabilize Cleven, who is going through the ups and downs of being an NHL defenseman. That's expected. I think we've seen Cleven where he's been good, and we've seen Cleven where sometimes you're like, ugh, maybe he's not as ready as we thought. And that's okay. That's going to happen. I'm not trying to get down on Tyler Cleven. But to downgrade Jensen to the third pair and elevate Travis Hamonic to the top pair when Jake Sanderson's already been struggling. If Sanderson had been having a great, consistent season, then it's like, you know what? I don't think Hamonic's going to bring him down too much. But that to me is just a wild decision. I've said it since the day JBD was drafted. I was like, that's Thomas Chabot's new partner because I saw so many similarities between JBD and Dylan DeMello. And I've been hoping that he can grow into that type of player because DeMello was Thomas Chabot's perfect partner. And the fact that the Sens let him go for a third round pick is something that will haunt me to this day.
And as a, I say I'm not a Jets fan anymore because I'm in the media, but like he's amazing with Josh Morrissey, who
Oh,
is
yeah.
putting up numbers that we thought Thomas Chabot would be getting at this time in his career, and he's just not. But Chabot's been okay. I think him and Cleven the past maybe five games have really taken a bit of a step back. But I think you're right about JBD and Chabot. Just JBD's just really good at, puck
Blocking
possession,
shots, playing a
blocking.
smart defensive game. Because that's the thing. Thomas Chabot needs to know, and this is why Zaitsev didn't work with Chabot or Hamonic. He needs to know that, hey, if I'm going to pinch and go for a skate, or if I'm going to try to be an extra guy that's going to the net to look at for a rebound or a backdoor tap in, I need to know the guy behind me has no interest in playing that offensive gamble, riverboat gambler type play, and he's always going to be back there to mop up my mess if it happens. And JBD can be that player because I don't look at him as an offensive guy. I want Thomas Chabot bringing that puck out of the zone every single time. I want him to be the transition guy every single time. So I think that's a pair that can really work, and I'm hoping that he ends up staying there and that Jensen ends up going to play with Sanderson because I've mentioned it a couple times, but it's worth emphasizing. We need to get Jake Sanderson back to the Jake Sanderson we know. And Jensen deserves to be on that top pair playing those big minutes.
And but that's kind of the problem that I can see from if I'm Travis Green is the Cleven Hamonic pairing just has not worked, and then
But
that's
that's your
been,
bottom pair. If you got to
yeah,
sacrifice maybe your bottom pair
no,
that's
I
paying
agree.
13 to 15 minutes a night isn't going to be top form up against other teams' bottom six, that's fine. I'm not willing to sacrifice my top defenseman in Jensen and my top pair in Sanderson and whoever he's playing
And
with just to try to supplement a third pair, right? That's how I view it at least.
no, and that's interesting because if you look at with before Zub got injured, there would be many nights where they were basically playing all three D pairs at 5-on-5, basically the same amount of ice time. And so he really
Yeah.
liked the idea of like depth. I no no, but I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I'm trying to kind of get the lens of Travis Green is okay, let's overwhelm teams like playing four lines. Like he was obviously, the fourth line's been really good so far for the Sens as well. Third line probably could use a bit more scoring, but has been pretty good defensively. But yeah, I think that's the give and take is do you kind of load up and go, just play your top four like crazy, which I think, in my opinion, like the more Jake Sanderson's on the ice, the more I like that.
Played 30 minutes last game, Alex.
And
30
he was
minutes. Like he can
amazing.
handle
He
it. Yeah,
was.
he was
And he
good.
was
Yeah.
the best player, maybe on
Mind
the.
you, a lot of that is power plays. When you get nine
Yes.
power plays, the defenseman on your top power play unit is going to
And
rack up the minutes, but he can do it. And I think he thrives off games where he's playing 24 plus minutes.
well, he even said that post game. He's like, just with the power play, it's like I was just getting a bunch of touches, so I just felt really good about my game.
Yep,
So
gets him in
obviously
the
that won't
game.
be the case. I was about in that game, I was like, if this team loses, how do you lose a game where you have 9 power plays? But anyways, that's another whole
We don't
question.
have to worry about that, Alex. Let's
No,
not
we're
go
okay.
there.
We're okay. But I do think that that's going to be the conundrum. But if you look at like talking to Green at all the practices and stuff, like he always talks about like flipping guys, flipping lines, flipping D pairings a lot, even though he didn't really touch the Shabbat Jensen pair for a while. So it seems like his philosophy is kind of overwhelm rather than just like go like supercharge McDavid Draisaitl on the same line. Like that doesn't seem to be where he comes from and how he sees it, at least so far. I'm sure he would tell you, I think that he's up. It's him and Steos. I think they're pretty good communicators, but everything's on the table, which means I can't, it's not helpful to ask questions because everything is on the table. But I think that's going to be really interesting moving forward, is just what happens. And I think the Sabrango, like if he plays well, I think that's the issue with this team, is they didn't really have anyone to replace Cleven. And now they might, but we'll see. It's hard to really gauge an AHL player, but he was a played at the World Juniors, had some high stock, and it is a cool story that he's from Ottawa and that his mom's just amazing on Twitter too.
It's definitely a big moment for them, especially he's a vet. This guy's put his time in the AHL. He's put his time in the ECHL even, and he hasn't really gotten his opportunity. Excuse me. He's having a great season in Belleville. He scored arguably the goal of the year. If you haven't watched that yet, go watch it. So he's a guy I hope gets in the mix just so he gets that opportunity. I think it was more we're going on a road trip. We need an extra guy here rather than like he's gonna come in and be a savior type thing, or hey, we don't need to make a trade. We're just gonna call a guy up and it's all gonna work out. So I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid, but yeah, great kid, great story, and hopefully he gets a start in one of these games.
Maybe like a bright spot of this season, and it's kind of obvious, and but we just really haven't talked about him much, is Tim Stützle. Like
Oh,
he's just taken us, I think his defensive game has got way better.
big
He's
time.
becoming like a puck hound that it
He's physical too. Tinted Timmy is out for blood.
Tinted to he is honestly. Have you noticed this too, that Drake Batherson and Josh Norris are getting into are just hitting everyone all of a sudden? I don't remember that in prior years, or am I like.
Josh Norris, especially the way he's, because I think before, if he wasn't scoring goals, what was he doing? He's decent at the draw. I should give him some credit there, but he got the big bucks for his goal scoring ability, and it hasn't. Sure, he's still scoring goals, but not at the pace that the Senators would hope. So he's had to find ways. Okay, I can't just have an A game of one timers, slap shots on the power play. I gotta find a B game, and I think he's found a B game. I've been very impressed with Josh Norris's ability on the penalty kill. Him and Claude Giroux typically are together on the same unit, and I've really liked what I've seen from them, especially late in games. Like you can tell he's putting his body on the line and he's giving it his all to stop other teams' power plays. So yeah, Josh Norris, I would say I've really noticed his uptick in defensive and physical play.
That's funny. Just I don't know, it was maybe a week or two ago, we're in the dressing room and he was just talking about kind of to the sort of media about blocking shots and being on the PK, and someone asked like, do you ever think about like trying to not block a shot because it's gonna hurt? He's like, all right, I'm gonna do whatever. And he was just like a warrior. And he's like, is there any adjustment? He's like, yeah, I just throw myself in front of the pucks now, kind of thing. And I think he's been really good. Their PK hasn't been great. I don't love the diamond. I get the concept, but I always feel like there's just always one guy that just gets all alone in front.
Yeah, can't happen.
But Giroux and Norris have been great. But I think maybe going back, circling back to Tim Stützle, he's just been
Oh, so good. He's this
so
team's
good.
best player right now and it's not even close.
No. But that's like if you talked to before the season, said, okay, this team's going to be much improved. Why? You'd look, okay, Tim Stützle is closer to that 90-point guy 2 years ago, and he's better than that now, right? At least on pace for that. And I think that's a really good sign where it's like, unless he gets injured, knock on wood, they're going to have that for the whole season, a guy who's going to get 100 points. And I remember checking the stat in the past 5 years, and it's almost impossible. If you have a guy that has 100 points, you almost always make the playoffs. I think the one guy was JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, one of the.
Or didn't Carl get 100
Yes,
points with the
Carl, yes.
Sharks?
Yeah, it
Yeah.
was those
But
two.
he's just playing no defense. He's like, we don't have a chance at winning games. I'm just gonna rack points up.
What a player. And he's still doing that kind of.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Good. The Pittsburgh Penguins. Now that's sad, but they have cups, so you take a little bit of the wrinkle away, but
Yeah, they've had their dynasty already. Yeah.
exactly. Well, I guess just maybe before I let you go, like, how do you see this team kind of turning, I guess, kind of turning the ship in the right direction in terms of a playoff spot? Like, what are the things that you think this team needs to do?
Well, I really do think Ullmark and Sanderson are gonna have regress kind of back to their game. So those are the big ones. I mean, your number one goalie and your number one defenseman getting back to form is if both of those things can happen, Alex, then I feel so much better about how this team is doing. I guess honestly, I think the big thing is Travis Green and the rest of the coaching staff. I think they did a great job bringing in Yeo and Baumgartner and obviously Daniel Alfredsson. I think that's a great coaching staff, and I think they're going to help this team turn things around. But they're going to have to find a way to have this team, and especially the leadership group we talked about, Brady Tkachuk, stay calm and keep going with the process because the results are going to get there. This is a team that I believe is built to be better than where they are right now. We haven't seen David Perron's game at all, and obviously I give him a lot of leash stuff going on with his family. We're hoping that things with his newborn child continue to trend in a healthy direction. Obviously that's going to have a big toll on a guy's mental health and where his mind's at, and now he's injured. So once Perron gets back to form, that's going to be a big boost. I don't think we've seen the best from Michael Amadio. He's been here in flashes and then kind of disappears. That's why he's been demoted to the fourth line. Noah Gregor, we're hoping, gets back into the swing of things. I really think that his speed brings such an element to this
Oh,
team
I
that they
completely agree.
need. So it's just, and these are all new players that I'm talking about here. So it's just a thing of having the guys that have been there being like, don't think that, like Travis Green mentioned it, he really gets a sense of the, oh no, here we go again from the team. And you got to get those guys off that attitude, and you got to have the guys that were brought in from winning established cultures. You got to get them kind of reinforcing the idea that they know that teams can turn things around and it's a long season and you can really figure it out. So I have not lost hope in this team. I believe in this roster, and they gotta find ways to figure it out. And I think if they can stay consistent, they're gonna do that. And I think Timmy is gonna keep leading the charge. Brady does what he does. So I got a lot of faith in this team, even which might be a crazy thing to say as an Ottawa Senators fan, but I gotta believe it, Alex. I cover this team daily with the Locked On Senators podcast. We do a postcast after every single game. If I'm just down in the dumps and like this team sucks, they're never gonna figure it out, I'm not gonna make it through the season.
No.
So I have to have the same mentality, I guess.
You guys just had Graham Nichols and we sit beside each other at the games and we keep saying like this isn't the same team. Like I maybe the mental part is similar and needs to be, as we've talked about for a while, kind of being figured out in terms of that resiliency and ability to come back in games and just maybe not fall apart. But if you look at their play on the ice, they have played like a really good team. And that, I don't feel like we've ever really had that in this Tkachuk, Stützle, Sanderson era, right? And, I'm gonna have to find many ways to write about this for Sportsnet, but in my opinion, there's two things that really need to that if they change, this team will make the playoffs. It's the
It's here.
mentality,
Okay. Yep.
goaltending. If those two things just they don't even have to be amazing, but just aren't like they're wasting away losses and they get 900 save like 900 save percentage, this team will make the playoffs. And I don't feel like that's that. Like Allmark's won a Vezina. Everywhere he's played, he's been above, I think, a 905, 906
Oh,
save.
yeah.
So it's like he should regress. And this team has played really well and are in essentially all these games. They're eventually gonna hope I think they're gonna win games and turn good play into wins. I don't know. It
Yep.
doesn't feel that far away, but the more they lose, the farther it feels away at the same time. And as you would know, that's a very frustrating feeling.
Well, and it's tough because you can get yourself in such a weird place when you look at the standings, because overall, the Ottawa Senators are 27th in the league. They like this kind of shocked me. They're tied with the San Jose Sharks in points. Now, mind you, the Sharks have three extra games and five overtime and shootout losses as opposed to one for the Sens. But that really kind of shook me up. I mean, heck, they're tied with the Anaheim Ducks, and the
I know.
Ducks have played one less game. But then you switch it over. I'm on NHL.com right now. You switch it over to the wild card setting. And they're only 4 points out. So you're like, ah, if you can get a win streak, you get those 4 points. But then also, you got to jump the Red Wings, the Blue Jackets, the Flyers, the Islanders, the Bruins, and the Sabres. So the fact that the Atlantic and the rest of the East is so kind of mid right now is both good and bad because those teams could get hot and get out of reach, or those teams could get cold and the Sens can make up the ground. It's going to be a battle, and I'm just hoping that the Sens find a way to stay in the mix.
I really think they're like a 1-5 or 6 game winning streak away from taking off. But it's like
Totally, but like Alex, you say that casually. Like a 5-game winning streak is hard to come
I
by.
know.
Like you got to have everything clicking
But
for that to
it does
work.
seem, and maybe, once this show is posted, we might be saying like, oh my God, they lost to the San Jose Sharks 6-1 or
Don't
something.
put that voodoo out there, Alex. Don't.
I always get
They
that from
lost to the Sharks
Julian.
last year and it was devastating.
I know Julian McKenzie always gives me shit where I'm like, I say something like the quiet part out loud. He's like, don't you dare, don't you dare, Alex, don't bring that voodoo into here. But they beat the Sharks, they beat Anaheim. You could easily beat the Kings, who are playing meh hockey, and then you come back, and I think they have Detroit and Nashville. It's like, I'm not saying they're gonna win 6 or 7 in a row necessarily, but they could get
The
come out of
opportunity
there.
is there.
Yeah, right there, and they're. So I really think they can just put some wins together, and they have been so close against Vegas, where they would have gone on a 3-game winning streak, against the Flyers, where they should, like, they're right there. So if they do that, then I think they'll be on a right track. I think it's really mental, and if they can just get some good vibes, some good stuff going, then they can really, I think, skyrocket. Because if you look at their underlying metrics, they should be like 9th or 10th in the NHL. They
At
should.
least middle of the pack. Yeah, not 27th.
Yes. So everything tells you they're good, except their record. So, well, we've heard that before, but Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time. I mean, you can plug the show. I obviously love it. You guys have been doing amazing work, and you deserve a playoff game. I say this every time I see you, Brandon or Ross, but you guys deserve a playoff game.
Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's we're recording episode 1173 today with zero playoff games. I have never been to an Ottawa Senators playoff game in my life. I want it more than probably most Sens fans, which is saying something because they want it badly. Because if we could cover a playoff team. Look, I love doing prospect profiles, but when you're doing prospect profiles and you're in the thick of the draft in early May, when other teams are eyeing the Stanley Cup, it gets depressing. So I would love at least to be in the mix in April for that home stretch. We get a lot of positive momentum and find a way to sneak into the wild card. That's what I'm going for. But you can follow along with the Senators season with us over at Locked On Senators Podcast. Find us on Twitter, X at Sens Central, Instagram, LockedOn.Senators. We post every day, Monday through Friday. We got an episode on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and then the postcast has been some of our biggest content. People love venting or vibing after a
Yes.
game with us. So after every single game, you can watch us live. It's usually myself, Ross Levitan, and then Laleems Martian and Jack Richardson get in the mix as well. We appreciate those guys for what they do too. So if you're not sick of Sens content, we got lots for you.
Your Sen sickos. It's do you have a
Yes.
favorite postcast that you've done?
Like, well, the one, it's crazy because you would think it would be games where we win, Alex, where I'm like, oh, that was so fun. We were vibing. But some of our best work is when we lose. We know how to lose. Our postcast up against the Vancouver Canucks was a postcast for the ages. We went an hour and a half.
Holy sh
I was so upset after that game, and we always say it's like a therapy session. You can vent. It's
Yep.
just guys getting together, venting about their issues with the team. We flushed a lot of thoughts out, and I felt so much better after. So honestly, sometimes the postcasts after huge losses are my favorite because I get vindicated by other Sens fans being like, "Pilsy, you're exactly right." Or the opposite, where people are like, "What is Pilsy talking about here? Why hasn't he smashed the panic button? I'm sick of Pilsy, positive Pilsy preaching patience. He's got to let this team have it." All those kinds of things. So I love the mixture of opinions from Sens fans, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build up the Sens community, give people a space where they can vent or vibe and get their opinions out. We do Sens Central Citizens usually once a week, where you can come on the show and for 15, 20 minutes, get all your Sens takes out, tell us how you became a Sens fan. We can get nostalgic together as well. So we're the people's pod. We try to bring a community together and have a space where Sens fans can feel safe and that they have a platform where they can voice their opinions.
As a therapist, I'm very happy to hear that venting is helping
Yes.
Brandon.
We
So
gotta do it. People don't do, especially Alex, you know this. I'm sure men, they don't often get together and talk about their feelings. I know we're talking about our feelings about a hockey team, but it's still
Hey.
good to get those out.
Exactly. And hopefully you won't need as much venting in kind of April. It'll be more
Little more vibing would be great.
just
Yes.
vibing, screaming, yelling, shouting, but in a good way. So, but
Yes.
Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time as you greatly kind of just plug. It's an amazing podcast. Everyone should check it out. And thanks again for coming on.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, Alex. Always happy to join.